Good afternoon. I'm from the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank. It is the 2nd of August and I'm with Mr. and Mrs. Averill. Good afternoon, Hanson and Anne.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Afternoon, Jim.
Now, I would just like to know about your family life right from the start to the present day, and I will just leave this with you.
Right, I'm Hanson and I was born on the 2nd of January 1927. At that time, my father was managing a station called Wanakino. It was all part of the Ullrich station. And he was managing for a Mr. Hector Smith, whom a lot of you would know that his family home was at Ormley Lodge, very close to the Waiheke Golf Course. He's a very genial old man. He used to come up when the shearing was on, the crutching was on, and he'd have a cursory look, but then he'd take Brother John and me bird nesting. And I can remember there was a demijohn, I think about 3 gallons, with wickerwork round the side, and the station bought the whiskey for Mr. Smith when he came to the station. I can't really remember him being a drinker of any great magnitude, but he was a very nice old man. What I do remember about him, he had a funny little 2-seater car with an open dicky seat at the back.
Go right back to where Grandfather came from, Hanson.
Going back to Grandfather Averill, his origins were in Staffordshire, in the Midlands and England.
And his name was?
Edward Averill. He came out to New Zealand, we understand, for the good of his health. He came out with banking experience, and we know from some old records that he was in Dannevirke.
Can I butt in here?
Yes.
Edward Averill was the son of John, who was the chemist in Stafford, and he was also the mayor, and of Mary Cliff. His siblings were George, Anne Hanson, Charles and Morris. He was born on the 26th of September in Stafford in England. He was educated at King Edward VI School and he served in Lloyds Bank in Lichfield. And he came in 1885 to New Zealand, arriving in Port Chalmers, or I've got Bluff written here and with a question mark, so it could be Bluff, but probably Port Chalmers, on the SS Aorangi. And in 1885, he was on the staff at the BNZ in Woodville for about 8 months. And as Hanson said, he came out with banking knowledge.
He really came out for the good of his health.
Yes, I'm sure. He was employed by Douglas Hamilton at Mangatra Station near Dannevirke for about 10 years. He was then employed by Barber Brothers at Himatangi. In 1895, he married Nora Newcomb from Palmerston North, who was daughter of Mr. N. Newcomb, and from our research we understand that the Newcombs were a very old family in Palmerston North, and we have information that they were very early settlers and had quite a lot to do with the formation of Palmerston North. Mm-hmm. And with Grandfather being in Woodville, it's understandable that they would have met. So in 1895, Grandfather Edward Averill married Nora Newcomb from Palmerston North. In 1896, he received an appointment with the Assets Realisation Board, the Farming Division of the Bank of New Zealand and Matamata. And he was appointed Assistant Manager at Matamata, property of the Assets Realisation Board. In 1896, Eric was born, Eric being the eldest son, followed by Cecil, who actually is my grandfather, which is how I get tied up in this, and Rochie, who is Hanson's father, in 1899, all born in Matamata. In 1901, Edward Averill returned to Mangatra Station as manager. While there, he purchased several bush blocks, which were later sold. Maury, the youngest son, was born in 1901 and born at Mangatra. In 1914, he was offered the management of Ullrich Station by the Smith brothers. In 1916, he purchased Eachells, a property in Kereru, wasn't it, Hanson?
Yes.
At £8 an acre. In 1922 was the dissolution of the Smith Partnership. Ullrich was divided into Ulrig and Wanakino, and Hanson will tell you more about that. Separate managers then appointed for both properties. Just finishing the history of Edward Averill. In 1924, he moved to Wanakino, but managed both properties until 1926. In 1926, he went to England with Nora, returned home, and settled at Eachells. He was on the Electoral College of the Meat and Wool Board. He was on the Board of Agriculture. He was on the Hawke's Bay Rabbit Board. He was on the AMP Society. He was on the Farmers Co-op. He was on the Hawke's Bay Meat Company. He was the chairman of the Howard Estate Advisory Board, which was then the governing body of Smedley. And he died in 1947 on the 3rd of August, aged 82, and he's buried in the Havelock North Cemetery. So that gives you a sort of potted version of Edward Averill, who was our ancestor who came out from England.
You could say, Anne, he was a very steady man. He didn't drink a lot. I'm not saying that successive generations, but he said it didn't agree with him.
He made a pound go a long way, didn't he?
Yes.
Could you just spell Mangatora, please?
Mangatora, M-A-N-G-A-T-O-R-O.
Should we now talk about Edward's oldest son? Because there's a good story there, isn't there?
Yes.
Edward's oldest son was Eric, and
he joined the British Army.
He joined the British Army and
was sent out to India at the time of the Mopler Rising.
But he was killed there, wasn't he?
Yes.
But he served in the Second World War, didn't he? Did he not, with the British? No, the First World War. But a very interesting story there for him. And he now has a little plaque like so many others do in here at Hereworth. So he was Edward's eldest son, followed by my grandfather, Cecil. And, well, they all grew up at Eachells, didn't they?
Yes. Opposite where Ted lives now.
Opposite Woodgate and Kiraroo.
And the Logans were further up the road.
And they went to Hereworth, did they not?
Heratonga.
And then they went to Nelson College, didn't they?
Yes.
Okay. And Cecil married Zilla Chumley Smith from
Waikato.
Well, that's near enough. And they had six children. They had Anne Adele, who was killed in the Napier earthquake. Age six, she was in hospital. Age six in the Napier hospital and was killed
I think part of the hospital collapsed on her.
Anyway, she was killed in the Napier earthquake. Mm-hmm. Then there was Joan, who was my mother, and she died about 20 years ago. And then there was Ted, Edward, George, Mary and Charles, who are all still living locally. So you talk about your father, Hanson, because he was next. Rochie was next.
Took over the management of Wanakino Station from his father, Edward. The Seddon government got into power in those years and broke up all these big holdings because they weren't getting the production from them because too few people owned too much land and they were consequently they were paying immense amount in taxation. So they broke them up into smaller blocks and that was for the good of everybody. Mr. Hector Smith, he was a very genial man. And he'd come up to Wanakino. He lived down at a place called Ormley Lodge, which is at the back of the Wyhick Golf Course. And he used to enjoy coming up because the station had a demijohn of whiskey on Dad's desk, and that was for his use when he came. But I don't remember him being a very heavy drinker.
Hanson, how did my grandfather Cecil farm at Woodgate? Where did Woodgate come into it?
Oh, well, that was out of old. My early days of Wanakina, because I was born in 1927, and there was no electricity. The electricity didn't come through till 1938. It got as far as the Logans and didn't cross the Kerrigan Wood until after the war. So Wanakina had a wood stove which heated all the hot water, but for the lights they had carbide gas, which is a white crystal, and I can remember the lights would get dimmer and dimmer, and my mother would say to my father, "Rochie, you'll have to go outside and stoke up the gas cylinder again." But the power came through in 1938, as I told you.
I've just remembered that I've got a piece here written about the acquisition of the land and how it was split up, and I'll just read some of it. In 1914, Ulrig Station, totalling 14,000 acres, was managed by R.B. Humphreys. Mr. Humphreys about this time made arrangements to take over 1,690 acres, now Etchells, and farm it on his own account, but he died prior to taking delivery. In 1916, Edward Averill was appointed manager of Ulrigg on condition that he could purchase Etchells at a satisfactory figure. So Etchells became the property of Edward Averill. Etchells takes its name from a farm at King's Bromley, Staffordshire, which was farmed by the Averill family for many years. Etchells had been all ploughed, cropped and grassed prior to purchase. The sheep and cattle were railed from Dannevirke to Waipawa and then driven overland by Cecil and Rochie through Argyll and Tikakino and Kereru. These sheep did not do particularly well on Etchells. In May 1924, a further 19.5 acres was purchased from H.J. Smith at £7 per acre. This was part of the paddock called Upper Horse Paddock at Wanakino Station. In March 1928, a further 85.75 acres were purchased from Mr. Smith at £8 an acre. This consisted of the paddocks now known as the Wedge and Riley's. In August 1929, 14.5 acres were purchased from Mr. Smith, being part of the Williams Hill Wanakino Station for £7 an acre, and this resulted in a better aligned boundary fence. The property now consisted of 1,882 acres, and the total cost was approximately £15,700. In 1920, in the second half of the year, 868 acres of Ulrigg land was sold voluntarily to the government for the use of World War I returned soldiers. This land included Woodgate. Cecil took over Woodgate, originally 391 acres, which he farmed initially from Etchells, just across the road. A further 152 acres were sold by Mr. C. E. Nelson Smith from his bordering Ulrigg land. Woodgate was named after a property farmed by the Averill family for about 300 years at King's Bromley, and separated by about a mile from Etchells, also in King's Bromley. Woodgate was later sold to Cecil's son Ted in 1961, who in turn sold the Tuke's block to his son Stephen in 1993. The rest of the farm is run by father and son. Woodgate is the only property still owned by the Averills. In 1922, Ulrigg Station, which had been run as a partnership up until this date, had been managed by Edward Averill. The trustees of the late C.A. Smith and Mr. Hector Smith at this time decided to dissolve the partnership and run each of their properties separately. The trustees retained the name of Ulrigg, and Mr. Hector Smith's property was called Wanakino.
Ulrigg, where they came from, is a little hamlet on the very north of Scotland.
1926, the trustees of Ulrigg Station paid for Edward and Nora to travel to Europe, as I've already said, returning the following year to finally settle at Etchells. In the meantime, Etchells had been run by Cecil and Rochie and Morrie under the supervision of their father. We haven't mentioned Morrie yet, we must do it. 1926, at this stage, Rochie Averill was appointed manager of Wanakino Station and Mr. Alec McKenzie was appointed manager of Ulrigg. 1931, while still at Wanakino, Rochie obtained the lease of the cottage from Mrs. Fountain, only child of Sir R.D.D. McLean, at 15 shillings per acre per annum. As he acquired the cottage lease during the Depression, he continued to manage Wanakino for the next 7 years until Hector Smith's only son, Ian, was ready to take over the property.
That was in 1938.
Unfortunately, Ian did not return from the war. During this period, Rochie employed two of his brothers-in-law to manage the cottage property on his behalf. 1938, Rochie moved to Mariakākahō to farm the cottage on his own account. 1947, Edward Averill passed away. Etchells was left in equal shares to his three sons, which they farmed in partnership until 1952. Frank Logan, advisor to Mrs. Fountain, returned from visiting her in England and informed Rochie that his lease on the cottage would not be renewed and his son Hamilton would now manage the property for Mrs. Fountain. 1952, Rochie purchased De Forry Eattie from the Gascoigne estate, built a home on it and farmed it in partnership with his son Hanson until Rochie retired to Taupo in 1958. Hanson continued to farm the property and in partnership with his son Sam from 1986 to 1991 when the property was sold. But we haven't mentioned Morrie, who was the youngest of Edward Averill's sons, have we? We've mentioned Eric, we've mentioned Cecil, Rochie and Morrie.
Did you say that Eric was in the English army?
Yes, but Morrie lived at Etchells, didn't he?
Yeah.
and he then retired to Taupo, and he died quite young, didn't he?
Yes.
I don't know if I've got it down here when he died, but we'll have it on a family tree somewhere. Now, you better talk about your sons, Hanson.
This is Hanson coming in now. I was at Whanganui Collegiate, and my father was leasing a farm called The Cottage, as all the McLean family had left. Ulrich, his two men had gone into the forces, so I left school. I thought I was a very smart fellow for a very short time. Times of petrol restriction, and you couldn't buy yourself a vehicle or anything like that. And I was going to town one day to look around for a car, and my father said, "Oh, Hanson, don't do that. You can always take the truck."
You had a brother called John?
I had a brother called John.
John was 18 months younger than you.
Yes.
If he was alive, he'd be 80.
Well,
90.
I'm telling the story about John. Was my mother thought that as she's breastfeeding me, she'd be immune from having another child, but it didn't work that way. And there's only 12 or 13 months between John and me, but after that, it was quite a while before Sister Adrian was born.
Well, finishing on John, he trained as an accountant.
Yes, John did not show any farming inclination. He was good with figures, and he got apprenticed to McCulloch, Butler and Spence, a very prominent Hastings firm of accountants. And then the Accountants Society gave a scholarship for budding young accountants to go and study in England. And John entered, and he was run up the first year and won it in the second year. And so he was in England. Alistair White, a friend of ours, was in England because he couldn't get into medical school in New Zealand. And John teamed up with a girl called Veronica. And Alistair said, "John, don't marry that girl." John, being John, married that girl. Of course, it all turned to custard.
But in the meantime, John had four children to
yes.
Veronica. And he had Catherine and Elizabeth, called Libby, and Miles, who lives in England, and Andrew.
Andrew was the youngest of the family, and we've really lost contact with him. He was the, what you might say, the black sheep of the family.
And then Adrian? Adrian was how many years younger than you?
I was born in 1927, and John 1928, and they slowed down a bit then. There was about 5 years. I'd have been 5 years old when Adrian arrived.
And you were living at Tifariti, you children, weren't you, as children? Did you grow up at Wanakino?
Yes, we left there in 1938, because Mr. Hector Smith, who owned the property, only had one son, and he had finished at Whanganui Collegiate and had been to Massey College and was ready to take over. So we went down to the cottage, which my father was leasing, and Cecil, Ian Smith, moved in to Wanakino. Sadly, he was only there for less than 2 years before he went off to the war and did not return. While he was away at the war, my uncle Cecil leased his property. No, he didn't lease it. He put a manager on, Arthur Housay, and he went across and managed Wanakino. Well, at the end of the war, sadly, Ian Smith did not return, and that's how the Renton family, because Moore Renton married one of Hector Smith's daughters, and that's how the Rentons were able to move into Wanakino.
Now, your boys. Talk about your boys.
I married early in the 50s to Carol Ludbrook from North Auckland. Sadly, the marriage was dissolved after 15 years, but we had three sons and one daughter. And I'll tell you about our only daughter, Marion. She had leukemia, which is cancer of the blood, and it finally got her in the end, which is a very sad time. Tim is a very successful farmer, orcharding and that style. Morris, we don't see a lot of. He's a doctor of law and lives in Sydney. And Sam threw his lot in with me because when we lost the lease of the cottage, we bought the freehold of 646 acres from the Gascoigne estate, which Sam and I turned it into a fat lamb farm. That means that every lamb we bred, went on export. He didn't keep any of the ewe lambs. And that served very well because it was a very dry, early block, and it suited itself for fat lamb farming because you didn't have to carry a lot of ewe lambs through the very dry January and February period.
As you said, Hanson, you farmed in partnership with Sam for some years, and Sam lived in the cottage, didn't he?
Yes.
On T4E as opposed to the other cottage. And we then sold the farm, and we elected to stay there, didn't we, in Mariakākehoe, and live in our house for 8 years before we moved into Havelock North, didn't we?
Yes. I wanted to retire, and I wasn't in a position just to give the place to Sam. So we sold Te Whareiti, and we sold for $1,000 an acre, which was very, very good money, and that set both families up.
Yes, I've got written here that Hanson and Sam farmed the property, Te Whareiti, in partnership from 1986 to 1991 when it was sold, and then you and I lived, we kept our house and 8 acres, and we lived there from 91 through to about 91, for about 8 years, didn't we? And then we moved to Havelock North. And we now live...
One episode which I want to talk to you about, Te Whareiti was very early country. It all lay to the north and west. It was very well watered, but got very dry early. So consequently, we made a fat lamb farm out of it. And we put rams out in January. And if we got between 95 and 98%, we'd had a damn good lambing. And we used to start and draft at the end of October, 30th of October, and these lambs got to England in time for the Christmas market. I can remember one time we were drafting, and Bob Chalmers, a very competent fat lamb drafter, came, and my father said to me, "Oh, Hanson, he's not marking them." I said, "No, Dad, he's got to take 1,400. That's what we've agreed." Well, he got to the very end, and the tally was 1,408.
Who was your carrier in those days?
Dave Walker.
Oh, and Hawke's Bay Farmers Transfer.
I'll amend that. Originally, we did all our carrying with Dave Walker, a very efficient man who made a feature of calling on every client once a year. He drove these trucks, and that business, I think, merged with J. Mills Limited, and it turned itself into Hawke's Bay Farmers Transport, which is still going now, but as I'm out of farming, you know, I don't know a great deal about it now.
Well, we used to sell our lambs for the Christmas market, didn't we? If we had any lambs left at Christmas time, we were in trouble because the Mariakākehoe hills dried off so quickly, didn't they?
Oh, yes, it suited us. We didn't want any smart percentages of 110 because that would have meant we had too many lambs over the January and February time, and it was damned hard work.
Daughter, who married Michael Kay, and they got married at the beginning of 1949. And my father is a Cantabrian, and they got married in January 1949, and we lived on Banks Peninsula for the first 14 years of my life. And I was going to Craighead Diocesan School at the time as a boarder, and because I was about to do school cert, they left me there for the next 2 years, so I commuted from Christchurch to Taupo, which is where my parents moved to once the family farm was sold on Banks Peninsula. And I then went to dental nursing school and became a dental nurse, and I was sent to Whanganui, and eventually I became ran the mobile dental clinic, which went around all the country schools, which I loved, and we had a few gin and tonics at lunchtime, which was good fun. Mm-hmm. And then came back to Hawke's Bay and dental nursed in Wairau for a while. Hanson and I got married.
Got married in 1979.
Yes, we did.
Because we were going to England in 1980, and we thought the British Willys would be more accepted as better.
And I worked for 4 years for Michael Laws MP as his electorate agent, which was interesting to say the least. And actually I loved it, it was great. And then I got headhunted to go to Lindisfarne, and I worked there for 19 years, retiring at the beginning of last year, 2015. Since then I've been retired, it's been wonderful. Yeah. And I have one brother, Chris Kay, and he is a site manager, I think that's what they call them these days, for Fletcher Building, and he is presently rebuilding Christchurch, but he is about to change jobs under Fletcher's and go to Auckland. So there are two of us, and I have, so that's Joan, I'm the daughter of Joan, and then there is, in the Cecil Averill family, Joan is followed by Ted, who has three children, and one of them's farming, one of them works for Elders Wool, I think, and Caroline works in Hastings. And then there is George, who has four children, last heard of, all overseas. Mary has three girls, Charles has three girls. So that's the Cecil Averill family. And the Rochi Averills, Rochi had one daughter recently deceased.
Yes.
So there's nobody left in that family.
Sister Adrian, yes, I was the eldest.
No, oh sorry, I'm talking about Murray, beg your pardon. I mean Murray had one daughter and she's recently deceased. So that's the rest of the Averill clan, isn't it?
Yes, Murray was the youngest of my grandfather's children. He had to go and ask his father if he could take the car to go to town and things like that.
And what sort of car in those days did you...
Armstrong Sidley.
Well, tell Jim the story about the car that turned up in our family. You know, the car that you had at Wanakino and was registered in your father's name?
Oh, yes, yes.
And what sort of a make of
car was that? The station, Wanakino and Ulrich Station, they both bought their managers' Buick cars. I can remember the one we had with a canvas hood. Belonged to Wanakino Station, but it was registered in my father's name because he was the manager of the station, and it's now in the possession of my
son. Jim that somebody out of the blue rang Tim, your eldest son, and said, are you related to Rochi Averill? And Tim said, yes, he's my grandfather. And he said, well, I've got a car that you might be interested in. Tim went and had a look at it, and sure enough, here was the car, which Tim still owns and is going to do up in his retirement.
I remember it was... In those days, Ulrich Station and Wanakino both bought the cars and they registered in the manager's name. Did you ever know Mr. Hector Smith? Did you ever go to a function at Ormley Lodge?
Yes.
Well, did I tell you that? I don't know what the people said. That was Hector Smith's home. And he used to have a three-seater car. He used to come up to Wanakino. He lived in a house straight behind Wyhead Golf Course. Red two-storied house? Yes. With Mr. Hector Smith. And he used to come up to Wanakino for the shearing and things like that. And his wife would bring my mother. Now, Mrs. Rochi, I don't want Mr. Smith to drink too much whiskey. There was a demijohn. You can remember
yes,
those demijohns?
Yeah,
it was bought for the station owner when he came to the station. And whiskey doesn't go bad if you don't drink it. But the Sen government got into power. My father told me all this story. Was the holdings were in too few people owned too much land, and they weren't getting the. If they got the production, they were just taxed, if you get the point I'm making. And so they cut up places, and they got, as a consequence, they got a lot more production. So we left Wanakino, Jim, in 1938. And at that time, Dad was leasing the cottage. So now that's where Tim Logan is, down in Maraikaka. And while he had his manager's job at Wanakino, he had two of my mother's brothers managing his leasehold property. So when we had to leave Wanakino, because Mr. Hector Smith had one son, and he didn't return from the Big World War. So that's how the Renton family got into Wanakino.
And Tim Logan related to Hamilton?
His son. He's a likeable lad.
I'm interviewing Hamilton tomorrow.
Well, Jim, it's all the bulk of the farmers leased to Brownrigg.
Very interesting indeed. And on behalf of the Hawke's Bay Knowledge Bank, I thank you very much.